Okay, well, just to recap a little bit, so I'm just going to spend a bit of time about the Gold Coast market and where we are, and obviously our master plan and the opportunity, before handing back to Matt to consolidate the discussion today and open up for some Q&A. So very much as you can see, the transformation of the property is very well advanced, and we're now going through on the main gaming floor and upgrading it to be aligned with the rest of the property. But it's great to be able to showcase it with you today. When we look at the key messages I wanted to cover here today, it is the property's transformation and earnings uplift is underway. So you've seen that. You can actually visualise and see the understanding of a sovereign room and the quality experience, particularly if you've been in the property 4 or 5 years ago before we started the transformation. You'll notice the difference in our hotel rooms, our food and beverage experiences, and of course our premium gaming rooms. And I'll touch on this in more detail. But there's obviously substantial long-term earnings growth opportunity as well, and that's off the back of market conditions, and I'll go through those very shortly. You've heard me talk about property drivers and large-scale integrated resorts and how they operate it with great licenses. A lot of that I covered this morning on Queen's Wharf obviously applies here as well, so I won't go as much detail onto there. But also the long-term development pipeline. So we've talked about the opportunity for up to another 5 multi-use towers on this island. That gives long-term growth opportunities for us to expand, as we can also, similar to Queen's Wharf, expand in our multi-terminal gaming machines, as well as our traditional tables as well. This property is operating its full capacity of gaming machines. And then obviously, point 4 is around the de-risked approach and how these multi-use towers, as Matt touched on, are very capital light in how they operate, but bring more activity and drive to the island, for which brings a full benefit. And again, I'd just highlight the significant difference between Queen's Wharf and here is that obviously when there's a full tower completed and delivered, any incremental revenue in gaming, etc., is 100% towards the start. So if I go through each of these in a little bit more detail, I'm going to touch on a similar slide to I had with Queen's Wharf on one scale. So we're on just over 6 hectares of land. And a lot of people, I think, because of the car park and the locations of the island, don't appreciate the development scale that is here and is available. We have an unparalleled position compared to all the other operations and cities. So literally there isn't integrated resorts that can appreciate beach views and are this close to that area. And it becomes a real destination itself. People may not be aware, but certainly out of China and Asia, the Gold Coast is a very, very well known destination. And obviously its ability to embrace what's great about the coastal environment is something very different to all the other integrated resorts across Australia. We've upgraded and we're expanding the integrated resort. So as I've touched on, you can see the quality of the facilities that we've upgraded, but also you now can see the expanded facilities, the Darling, particularly obviously our sovereign room and our VIP gaming areas, our chairman's, is about lifting the standard to deliver to that high segmentation groups that are in our property and driving domestic and international visitation to this property. I've talked about the long-term development, but some of the key aspects also. So 1,651 slots, which in this market is about 22% of the Gold Coast licences. Again, pubs and clubs are capped on the Gold Coast as well. So compared to the size and scale, Brisbane was about 12.5% with the 2.5%. At 1,651, we're about 22% of the local machine market. Within that local machine market, we've obviously got the same components in regards to pubs and clubs. Capped at 300, no max bet for us. They have a max bet, so all those same conditions apply. 201 multi-terminal gaming machines, which is about literally a 50% increase on where we were only a couple of months ago, continues to be expanding and growing product. And as I touched on in Brisbane, multi-terminal gaming machines are exclusive for Queensland casinos, and therefore the only 2 venues in the whole of southeast Queensland where you can play multi-terminals are in Brisbane and in here on the Gold Coast. 652 hotel rooms today, with Tower 1 coming on board, that takes us close to 1,400 potential keys with the 313 in Tower 1, but also the apartments on top of it. We're now up to about 21 food and beverage outlets, and as each tower comes on board into the future, that number's going to grow, and it won't be long before this property potentially has 30 to 40 food and beverage outlets as well. And about 2,300 car parks, just under, in regards to its capacity, so sufficient sufficient parking on the island to meet that demand. We've also got the light rail and the connectivity as well. So like I touched on, let's just walk through each of these points relatively quickly. So the transformation's underway, and the earnings growth as assets have been upgraded and enlarged, and we've seen that success throughout financial year 2017 and certainly calendar year 2017. As a time frame perspective, it's only 3.5 years ago we have not updated any of the restaurants or started on any of the hotel rooms. So it just gives you a feel for how quick and effective that transformation has been. And now we're at a point where we've got the extra capacity, not just in hotel rooms, food and beverage, but also a significantly expanded main gaming floor. The visuals themselves I'll go through very quickly because you've seen all of these, but the island is transformational. Real focus on food and beverage and new outlets has been a real driver for increasing local visitation. As we talked about, that it's the food, the culinary experiences which bring people to the property. We've also got a very, very successful conference business here. Our ballroom, which can seat up to 1,000, is frequently full on every Friday and Saturday, which drives activity to the property. Obviously, we go through on the main gaming floor expansion and also up to where you are today, which is a 19 in the Darling, which really sets a new benchmark, and you can feel what that luxurious feel of the new hotel is all about, and both in the shared gaming facilities but also in the hotel rooms themselves. But also want to touch on the demographic trends here are also exceptionally positive. So this is the largest non-capital residential population in Australia. 0.6 million residents, and again 3.3 million in the broader southeast Queensland. The Gold Coast does exceptionally well out of the local Brisbane market, coming to the coast on weekends and driving significant visitation. Population growth here has grown 25% over the last 10 years, is expected to continue over the next decade, and again in a more attractive population mix, with about 5.4% of Gold Coast residents are now Australian born. So similar to Brisbane, these numbers are growing and growing quickly, populations are growing, but also the breakdown of that population is strong. Matt's touched on this a lot, as we've done as well, but obviously this is a tourism capital. It's a strong visitation area. We've got access to two airports in the Gold Coast and in Brisbane. The majority of that premium mass that comes through to the Gold Coast actually flies through Brisbane, but we've got an continuing upgraded airport at Coolangatta as well that is obviously bringing a significant amount of domestic flights straight into the city and starting to have more of that lower-end international flight as well. It's expected over 5 million visitors were in 2017, and there's about a 5% trend in that continuing to grow. So when you talk about city beach desired destination by Chinese visitors, driven by Gold Coast signature brand recognition and value, it's in the top three. So when you talk about that mass market coming out of Asia, coming out of China, we're not needing to build the reputation and brand as the Gold Coast. It's already known and is already critical. And the airport's expanding and continuing to grow in its numbers as well. Similar to Brisbane, I want to talk just briefly on the actual precinct itself. So here we are right in the heart of Broadbeach. Significant amount of accommodation exists. One side of us, we have the Gold Coast Convention Centre, which is a very successful business-driving activator and is actually also operated by us and has been a real driver to the success of our high occupancy in our hotels. Here on the Gold Coast, we've been full every December, January for the last 4 or 5 years. Easter holidays, school holidays, very easy to fill up. But our visitation and occupancy in hotels outside of school holidays is really driven by a conference and business market, as well as a growing leisure tourist market. Whenever the convention centre has strong activity, our occupancy is full. Whenever we have strong occupancy, like this week, we've got Harcourt staying in-house, that drives a significant number of hotel rooms, which means we're full, but also drives a successful conference business, and a lot of them enjoy the rest of our facilities as well. On the other side, we have Queensland's largest shopping centre in Pacific Fair, gone through a $670 million upgrade, and as we know, that retail market and that shopping component is a key need and desire from our international guests out of Asia and China. So here we are in a precinct, we've got the convention market as well as the retail market covered, and we're able to focus on our culinary experiences, food and beverage, and expanding hotel capacity to leverage both of those, and obviously with the unique product that is the gaming. Long-term license terms. Look, these are very similar to what I covered, so I just wanted to touch on, but obviously big share of the local market. Local market of slots is capped. We don't have any caps, they do. All of those components apply again, and we have a significant competitive advantage against the local pubs and clubs. So all of those trends make this, again, a very attractive license to have. Matt touched on it. It has no end date. We have it in perpetuity. It is a fantastic license that we have here. So I've gone through that very fast because a lot of it does cover up with what we had this morning, but we are in a great location that's growing, we have a great opportunity to expand, and we have a wonderful licence. That's what gives us confidence going into the broader master plan. The first tower of the five towers has gone through all DA approvals, and in fact, as we've recently announced, has hit our pre-sales targets and will commence in August. And that will bring up to another 700 keys into the island, 313 in the Dorset Hotel, but also a portion of those 423 apartments we expect to come into a serviced pool that we'll be able to leverage. We're only 20 or 30 minutes from the Coolangatta Airport. We're only an hour to Brisbane. And also we have a complementary asset in the Sheraton at Mirage, which is at the Spit, which obviously allows us to deliver our guests a really unique beachfront experience. So you can start to see how when Patrick talked about packaging up holidays and looking for really unique experiences, we can bring someone into southeast Queensland, have some days at Queen's Wharf, extend their stay into the Gold Coast, whether at the Star Gold Coast or down to the Sheraton Mirage, therefore delivering 7 to 10 days of their visitation, knowing they'll use the rest of our facilities as they do that. The towers themselves, you can see some shots on there just to try and visualise, but obviously on the left-hand side you can see where the Darling is just operated. The tower behind that is the luxury high-end hotel facing north, prime piece of real estate where the old monorail station used to be. The other four are all on this left and southern side of the island and literally would be developed in order around clockwise. So Tower 1, which is right behind us here, then wraps around into Tower 2, 3 and 4. What happens with that is obviously where you get talked a lot about the extra hotel rooms and the apartments, but also each podium brings additional car parking, but also additional food and beverage and colouring experiences. So as we launch each tower, we start to expand on our food and beverage, and I'll touch on that shortly. It also ends up with a significant rooftop podium. So when you look at Garden Kitchen and Bar, which was the outdoor lawn area, can you imagine that 5 times larger with luxury pools and spa treatment areas on the rooftop of the facility, a real coastal resort. So we're very excited not just about the extra capacity of hotel rooms and service departments, but the transformation that'll bring to this resort as a destination. And that's the pool as part of Tower 1 and the retail of Tower 1. And that's just an overview of the master plan to give you a bit more bearings about how it operates. So Tower 1, 318 keys, 423 service departments, up to 5 and towers in total, up to 2,200 apartments, and the car parking, depending on how many of those apartments take a car park with them, the car parking can expand to over 5,000 in numbers. We've been selling apartments for Tower 1 at about $1 million a day since we launched it in September last year. So we're already at about 84% of all those units have been locked away or allocated. So just to give you an indication of how popular and interested people have been in buying residential apartments here, that has gone at an unbelievably fast rate, which gives us a lot of confidence that it won't just be one tower we'll be looking at. It could be a lot more. I did have a question earlier about, is it one bedroom, two bedroom? We're getting a lot of interest in one bedroom. We've got a lot of interest in one bedrooms out of Sydney as well as in Asia. So primarily one bedroom, one bathrooms, but we're also sold a lot of two bedroom, two bathrooms, and ended up putting more one bedrooms into the units in the later stages just because they'd sold out very quickly. So demand is primarily for one and two bedroom units. Before I hand over to Matt to wind up, I just want to highlight how important we've found here at the Gold Coast the appeal of the destination, the appeal of the food and beverage and the culinary experiences, and the shift that's happened both locally. This property had been here for 30-odd years. It was known as Jupiter's. Primarily its food and beverage was about servicing its gamers, and the hotel over a period of time was a good engine room for the property, but it wasn't a destination itself. Outlets like Kiomi, Vivo, Garden Kitchen and Bar have changed that whole perception across the city, as has 19. We're now known as a food and beverage culinary destination for locals. This is a place where they bring people to celebrate, to go out, and for a lot of our customers to come frequently. And that's been a real success story, but we want to build on that. And like I touched on, as we build each of these towers, we're going to drive more keys and access to more people to stay on the island. We're also attracting, with the expansion of food and beverage, for more locals to come and choose here to be the destination to play, which, as you know, when more locals, particularly those that are interested in playing slot machines, etc., come to visit the property for food and beverage and other activities, they will also spend their gaming dollar here. So we've been really positive about the feedback we're getting out of domestic and international guests. But a big wave of the success and the story that gives us a lot of confidence is how the locals have embraced the change and enjoyed the fact of what we've transformed into the Star Gold Coast. So this slide touches there on what we're operating today and what we've just opened up in the last few months. Around 19, the sports bar, Cherry and Food Quarter. As we bring into Tower 1 and Tower 2, we've got a lot of specific food options to expand on, from Vietnamese to steak to seafood to Thai. We've got the chocolatier shop that opens up. We've got a tappers that's coming through. And then on top of that, we've got some casual dining experiences, our large Chinese restaurant, which I think in Tower 1 is just going to be unbelievable. And on top of that, an expansion of bars. So it's that real culinary experience here and that shift on the island that is really positioning us with a lot of confidence moving forward, on top of the hotel capacity, on top of the service departments, and of course this great, great license that we have to be able to operate 1,651 machines, an expansion in table games, and expansion of multi-terminals. And that's why when you see areas like the main gaming floor expansion area, as well as the empty floors that we've got in this tower that allow us to expand into VIP gaming as the demand needs it, we've positioned ourselves for significant growth. So I've gone through that very quickly, but I know it's a lot of information that repeated from this morning, so I'll now hand over to Matt.
So let me just recap what we tried to communicate over the day. First of all, in the morning we talked about the foundation and the strategy for the company. We hope to demonstrate that we have, over the last few years, developed a reasonable track record around revenue growth and expense containment. We talked about the fundamental attractiveness of our markets. We talked about the quality of our licenses and the positive concessions that we have available. We talked about our capabilities. We met Patrick Tsang, who brings additional complementary capabilities. And we talked about our balance sheet to deliver all of that. So hopefully that gives you a sense of the solid foundations that we have. Then in Queen's Wharf, the key messages were we've got positive, in fact, I would say improving fundamentals around the market drivers. We've got a development opportunity that we're trying to maximize. And the investment and the construction so far is progressing to plan, and we continue to plan it for an opening in late 2022. And here at the Gold Coast, I think the Gold Coast is a bit of a sleeper, probably the most underestimated opportunity. Hopefully you're seeing a little bit of what we're doing right here. The transformation's underway, very strong fundamentals, and particularly exposed to the tourism upside, and a fantastic long-term tie pipeline that we can execute in a capitalized fashion with our partners. So those are the key messages we wanted to leave with you. I realize we were rushing this morning with questions, so we've got a bit of time now to take any questions anybody might have before we break for the day. Matt.
The Queensland government seems to be actively looking for a second person to give a license to. In Queensland. What's the thinking around that?
Well, that second Gold Coast license has been kicking around for 5-6 years now. Remember that it was AFS who had the first stab at it. We managed to get rid of that. I can't give you any guarantees, but I think the probability of a second license is very, very low. At this point, I would also say the probability of us participating in a process for a second license or to pay for exclusivity is also very, very low, because I think we are in a unique position here with a big commitment and big opportunity to capital investment in the relevant assets. And what we're communicating to the government is, you know, if you want those tourism-related assets, you can't afford to have a second casino that cuts into the base earnings. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of politics being played right now, but we continue to be optimistic. And we won't press the button on further investments until that clarity has been created. John?
Matt, you referred to the Gold Coast asset as a sleeper. If you look at that $109 million of run rate EBITDA, which parts of the Gold Coast casino are yet to actually contribute? And can you talk about what success would look like for those new elements of the Gold Coast asset?
So the area that we really haven't scratched the surface on yet is domestic high-end business. For that domestic high-end business, you need private gaming rooms. We now have the best private gaming rooms in the country. I don't know whether you went up to the chairman's level 17, but you would have seen a product that I can assure you, you won't see anywhere else, along with a hotel product that is truly complementary. So we are very focused in building up that domestic high-end business. That is a market of probably $300 million around Australia today. Most of it sits in Melbourne and Sydney. We can get a much bigger share here of this market, and we think we can expand this market, particularly in the months when the weather here is so fantastic. The second opportunity is around VIP. VIP, we're now here the third largest market. I don't think we've really scratched the surface on that. So the response we've had from junkets and premium mass players in particular has been very positive. That is a business that I think you will see expand continuously for quite a period of time. In the domestic, in the local market, we already have a 33% market share. You know, we'll get a little bit more of the tourism business coming through, but the local market, you know, this is not why we're doing this. Sam?
Thanks. So I guess, you know, like we've been presented some really amazing transformational type things, mm-hmm. But, you know, for most people it's 7 years away and their attention span's like 3 to 6 months. So
most people are long-term investors and they can see through that.
I'm not talking about myself, but so I guess, you know, I think you've presented the fundamentals that, you know, I could see in 6 or 7 years. But whilst, you know, you're going through developments in Sydney, doing stuff here, doing stuff in Brisbane, the likelihood of sort of earnings missteps or, you know, like how should we think about the more next 2 or 3 years and what you expect in terms of the base business, mm-hmm. in terms of how solid it is before some of these option values start paying off?
So as you know, we're not giving earnings guidance, but I can tell you how I'm thinking about the budget for next year. I'm thinking that VIP can't go backwards. You know, we've now, you know, you've seen we're in the second half, we're up 67%. We will, you know, have a record VIP year this year. I don't think that's going to grow dramatically again because we're making up for the Chinese disruption from the year before. But I don't see that business going back. In fact, I think there's more profitability in that business. Brisbane has found the floor, and I'm comfortable that we can maintain profitability in Brisbane. Gold Coast needs to deliver some decent growth. We now have new assets. We have in our run rate our expenses. I want to see some decent growth out of the Gold Coast. And Sydney will have some disruption in the private gaming rooms, but a pretty solid fundamental market. So I don't see Sydney going back. I don't see Sydney growing the way it used to be, but I don't see it coming back. You add all of that, and you should see a reasonable result.
And in the trading update you gave, so you talked about the hold rate in PGR. Just so I'm clear, so because it seems like it's made quite a big difference, because we're talking about trading update for what period were you talking about?
Second half.
Second half, right. So going into next year, assuming that doesn't change by the time you report earnings, was it that this period was specifically weak and PCP was normal, or was there a difference in the PCP?
PCP was normal.
Right. So next year the comp therefore should be easier.
Should be easier on the win rate, yeah. I mean, the win rate is you know, in my period at Star and prior to Tabcorp, I've not seen that sort of level of swing in the private gaming rooms. And particularly in Sydney, that has to do with a group of super high-end domestic players we have not seen in the past. And they're just super volatile. So these are people that are playing 100 to 300K a hand domestically, not VIP.
And so just so I understand, so have they come from Melbourne? If you haven't seen them in the past, have they come from interstate?
Some of them are locals who spread their game around. Some of them have pushed a little bit more of their play to Sydney. Some of them have migrated to Australia.
Just a question on the CapEx, I guess $600 million since your last disclosure. Can you just talk about how much of that was cost inflation versus the increased scope?
For Queen's Wharf? So in terms of the increased scope, you know, that really drives the bulk of the concrete and steel that needs to be built out. We're up about 25%. About of the $600 million, we have increased pure scope on a like-for-like basis by about 350, and we've increased our allowance for potential cost escalation by 250. That is to be tested when we go to market. Does that make sense? I just wait for a tick.
Hi, Nick Basil, Goldman Sachs. Just a question back on the marketing alliance with Chow Tai Fook. How quickly can you realise that $30 million EBITDA opportunity? How quickly can you move? You said you were going to be looking at it next year. That would be one area of upside in the next couple of years.
Yep. Look, the alliance really has two major segments. One is the VIP part of it that Patrick referred to as the associates of you know, Dr. Cheng and Dr. Chu. Sorry, if anybody's got bags, they've been brought to the Darling. And just in terms of logistics, we do have buses leaving at 4 o'clock, one going back to Brisbane and one going to the Coolangatta Airport. So you should make the 5 o'clock flights. So two separate customer segments. One of them is the VIP business. You know, that really relates on basically the personal involvement of those senior partners to introduce us to some of their senior players and then form groups that can be brought over. A lot of that activity can be realized next year. It's not a lot of people. We just need to create the right events around that. And so I expect that, you know, if not in the first half, certainly in the second half of next year, we'll see a bit more of that. The mass market, the more premium mass opportunity of selling the hotel rooms into the mass market, that is a bit like CRM. We have to test the database. We have to start with different offers, see what the response rate is. But I expect that in 12 months' time, we'll be able to give you a pretty good flavor of the amount of mailings, the response rates that we're getting, and how much of that value we will have been able to crystallize. That will take a bit longer to build up.
So should we think about that split as 80-20, like we talked about other areas of the business, or is that too simplistic?
When you talk to some of our colleagues, you know, they rattle off a couple of names, and you've got basically, you know, $50 billion worth of turnover spoken for, VIP turnover, right? But that traffic has to materialize and has to be played through. So I really don't want to speculate on that. I want to see that being materialized first. Long term, I'm much more excited about the premium mass opportunity because that is, like our own CRM, like our own loyalty, that's something that we continue to milk and go back to. And, you know, we have interesting data, right? We can see where they shop. We can see what they buy. We know who travels. So we have interesting information about these people and can be a lot more targeted than you would otherwise be.
Thanks.
Anthony Longo, CLSA. So earlier this morning you were talking about the loyalty programs and sort of looking at some of those features that, you know, some were making you money and some were costing money. Are you able to sort of give a feel as to, you know, maybe what some of those areas are that you've sort of looked at already that you might sort of wind back on and focus on some of those other areas that will make money?
Yeah. Well, I'll give you two specific examples. You know, as part of our loyalty program, we benchmarked our loyalty program against our peers, and our loyalty program is more generous than other people's loyalty programs. In particular, the gifting program that we use to stretch players up to the next tier is proving out to be effective only for certain parts of their journey. We can save ourselves some significant money by culling the frequency of these gifts and consolidating them more at the point where we see that the gift actually creates a real stretch. The second part of it is the hotels, hotel offers, where we have many, many more hotel offers outstanding than our partners. And again, when we analyze the data, we see that some of the offers only shift the day of play. Others are actually introducing an extra trip. We're trying to rebalance that towards the extra trip away from the shifting the day of play. Pardon me? We won't book. Well, I don't expect that we'll book a profit on the apartment sales. Chad, do you want to take that accounting question? I'm a bit dusty on that stuff. Rusty?
Until completion, right, it'll be quite immaterial, as Matt pointed out this morning. You know, net impact over, you know, on completion and development is about a $10 million equity check, net investment by after all the sale of the completion of the assets, and so therefore get a 700 keys for about $10 million equity check, but not till 21.
All right. Sam? Sorry, it's Tim.
Since we're talking about accounting, can you explain to us how, from an accounting perspective, all this development stuff works? Because this is the first time we're going through off balance sheet for the company. I mean, it's, you know, the company's been around a long time. So all the off balance sheet, So how it goes from beginning to end, and what goes through the P&L and when it goes through the P&L?
Yeah, so they are all equity investments, so each one of them, but each one is slightly different. So, you know, Queen's Wharf as an example is an equity investment. We put those equity investments in up front, and therefore it'll be realised below the line, the profits that come from it afterwards. So it won't be we won't be consolidating Queen's Wharf. Same with the joint venture towers, the Aziz here. And the reason why we continue to put a separate, you know, when you look at our CapEx, we talk about it on our CapEx slide, it is core CapEx on our balance sheet, and we'll always comment separately about the equity investments that we're putting into the joint ventures. So that will be associate income that sit below the line as well from the hotel for Tower 1 here in the Gold Coast.
So each of these investments will have its own funding off balance sheet, of which you're part of you'll put a bit of equity in throughout the project, so will your partners. It will have debt within the off balance sheet vehicle?
Correct.
And the debt is non-recourse to you?
We're looking at different options for recourse versus non-recourse. So if you look again at Queen's Wharf, we're already given the commitment to the state between ourselves for our share, 50%, and Chow Tai Fook for our partner share. The commitment has already gone to the state that we'll build the integrated resort. So we will look at on-balance sheet versus off-balance sheet, have a look at the cost differential, but at the end of the day, we've already committed to the state that we're building Queen's Wharf. The joint venture towers here is all off-balance sheet, again, looking at recourse versus non-recourse, what's the commercial difference to us in terms of value. But and for both the projects, all the projects, equity goes in first.
So if because the thing is, look at Sky City, who are spending money, right? And whether they get a return, we'll see. But you know, when they're building it, they're capitalising net interest, and there's D&A. once it builds, this stuff comes through the P&L, and so you might get EBITDA growth, but NPAT decline sometimes with these things. With your developments, basically none of that stuff actually touches the P&L, right? So there's no, so the net interest cost is for the equity injection only.
Correct.
And there's no increase in D&A in the corporate.
Correct. It all comes through below the line as associate income.
Okay.
And then we keep on our own P&L the flow through. So any traffic that then gets generated for the gaming bars, restaurants, or any of the earnings from the hotels or retail, food and beverage in those developments, goes through our main P&L.
Yeah.
Now, the operator fee for Queen's Wharf will come through on our own P&L. That's the only difference. The equity component, the 50%, that'll come through as associate income, but the operator fee will come through our P&L.
Yeah, hi, Matt. David from Macquarie. Are we able just to dig back into the trading update and maybe talk about where front money is on VIP in the second half? And just secondly, are we able to maybe talk about the Gold Coast asset, how it's tracking post-com games and pre-com games, and potentially how the floor's going in Sydney?
So front money, Chad, do you want to take that? So turnover was about up 67% year on year. Front money's down a little bit relative to that because we've got more turns, which points to a more normalized win rate than we had last year. You may recall that last year we had a very high win rate, so people churned through the front money very quickly. But it's up, you know, it's up strongly. In terms of the trading update on the main business, I would just point you to the fact that the win rate is really clustered around the private gaming rooms. The volumes are strong in the main gaming floor. The volumes are a little bit softer in the private gaming rooms, but not materially. It's really the win rate that swings us around. The main gaming floors are doing well.
Sorry, Chad, just one, just back on the equity accounted vehicles. So are they all going to be just in terms of the debt equity mix in those vehicles? Are they? Can you give us any insight on what they're going to be for each of them?
Yeah, so typically we're looking at about 40% equity going into it, about 60% debt level going into it. We will obviously as well look from our own balance sheet, regardless of whether it's off balance sheet debt or not. We will look at proportionally consolidating that debt. So when we look at our own gearing capacity, our own balance sheet capacity, we'll absolutely proportionally consolidate. The rating agencies look through that anyway, so as we'll continue to look through that for our own capacity as well.
Hi, Matt, me again. Just with Tower 2 on the Gold Coast, given the fact that you've got the second casino license issue rearing its head again, are you still going to continue with pre-sales on Tower 2, or will you wait to get better clarity on what happens there?
We haven't started with pre-sales for Tower 2. So the only pre-sales that have happened is here for Tower 1, and we'll continue to sell Tower 1 because Tower 1 we're committed to build in the current environment. Tower 2 we haven't commenced. Okay, good. If there's no more questions, I just want to thank you for coming up and making the trip. I hope this is useful. And, you know, hopefully we don't have to wait another 7 years for the next investor strategy day. Thank you very much.